Session number 2, free 181, wheel 5.
Mr. Jessup, reel 5. Now, one thing that might be relevant to that is you'd had a change in commanding officer from Lieutenant Commander Brock to Lieutenant Commander Cooper.
R&R.
Now, what could you tell me what you thought of Cooper, whether perhaps it was his fault, but what were your impressions of Commander Cooper?
I don't think anybody would really say that they liked Cooper at all. I think, firstly, in the Navy, you always think of R&R officers as weekend sailors. And I don't think that puts a lot of confidence in the crew. And I think after a while, I think even more so, it became very noticeable that our Mr. Cooper used to like a glass of gin or two or three. Or four. And to give you one very important thing, when he was in charge, he was a commanding officer, we were doing in the Minches in Scotland, a patrol in the Minches of Scotland. And as you, I don't know if you do know, that the Minches has water coming in about four or five different ways, and it's very, very rough. And this particular time, we were having about a gale force 9. I was on the wheel, and we were sort of just about keeping enough steam on to keep our head into the water, into the waves, which so that it made it as comfortable as possible. And all of a sudden, up the ladderway from his cabin into the chart room came Cooper. Now, at this particular time, the officer of the watch was out on the bridge, out on the side of the bridge, and he came in and he walked over to the telegraphs and put them full ahead. And of course, trying to plough into the water, the stern was coming up and the props were, the screws were just flying around, and the officer watch came running in. He sort of very, very quickly turned them back. But had he sort of given order, like port full of, harder port or harder starboard, we'd come abreast of the waves, then it could have been very, very different story.
And you put that down to him drinking?
Yeah. Oh, he was as drunk as a skunk. He really was. When he came up onto that onto the wheelhouse, he was a drunk as a skunk, and it was quite
visibly.
He was sort of, he was not his anything he said was slurred, and his what's name was not his gait was quite wobbly, So
how did that affect morale? I mean, having a drink.
This is what I was saying. Nobody sort of put a great deal of, I wouldn't sort of, and many of the crew put a great deal of trust in him as an officer, especially as a commanding officer, even more so. But
now you mentioned you. What were your duties? This is getting on into the ship. You were an able seaman by then.
Yes.
What were your duties?
I was I was now on. I was bosun, first off bosun's mate, and then I was made up to bosun.
Now, what were your duty as bosun and bosun's mate?
When bosun and bosun's mate, when you alongside the dock, your duties were on the gangway. The bosun's mate made all the pipes over the speaker system. For everything like that, and bosun was in charge of the of anybody coming aboard or that sort of thing.
So what would you do? I mean, how did you actually Do you check everybody or what?
Yeah, oh, well, I mean, if anybody, what's name, come on, if sort of workman, dockyard workman came aboard or an officer from one of the other ships, like, you know, came aboard, then you'd speak to them, and if it's an officer, you'd take him through to the wardroom. And then at sea, we were on the wheel.
Tell me about doing the wheel. Can you describe the wheel and how you actually did it?
I suppose the wheel was slightly different to an English one, in as much as it was filled in. It wasn't spoked, as nearly all English ones are. But it was a filled in wheel, and instead of having about 3 3/4 turns for full over, you could turn it like that and you'd be hard over. A lot more responsive than a British wheel. What else can I... not much else I can
tell.
Where
would you get the orders from?
From the officer of the watch. I mean, he would... If you went into action stations, then the coxswain, the petty officer coxswain, he would take over from you on the wheel, and he would then take orders from the voice pipes above him, because as soon as you go to action stations, the main officers go up onto the top bridge, and all orders come down through the voice pipe.
So you'd just be doing it during routine, sadly.
Yep. And then, of course, we went into action. Then I'd revert back to my the job that I had for action station.
And what was that then?
That was still back onto the communications on the bridge.
So that hadn't changed.
No, that didn't change.
You were never on the guns then.
I was for a while. I was on the Oerlikon with one of the other ratings, because one of us used to put the pan on, and the other one used to be in the And I was on that for on the Oerlikon guns, but
which one?
On the it was midships on by the funnel. That was the one that actually got swiped when we hit the Wisteria, because they do stick out a little bit over the edge, and of course as he came down the side of us, something caught the Oerlikon position.
Did you actually get? Were you actually trained to fire it, or were you just loading?
I was loading most of, but I mean, naturally, if anything happened, I was able to fire it. Like, you know, I mean, that's everybody sort of does a double job.
Now, the Naples convoy stopped in about October 44, and you did go on to this period where you were hunting submarines off Ireland and the North Sea and North Scotland, rather.
Yeah, all over
Ireland. And just patrolling, generally looking for submarines. What do you remember of that?
I think sometimes we were alone. You know, we didn't go in a pack as much as then, if I remember rightly. I could be totally wrong on this, but I can remember, I mean, that the time I was just talking about when we were in the Minches. I'm positive we were on our own then, but whether that was because of, because we stayed behind in Gibraltar to have these repairs done, so of course when we got back, the rest of the flotilla was out, and so whether that was at that particular time, but I know we were doing quite a bit of single-handed work at that time down through the Irish Sea, but I know we're going back. Sorry, I'm sort of drifting back again. One of our biggest troubles was when we were on the
Naples
run, was the Spanish fishing boats as you came up through the they would encroach into the into the convoy. Why, I can never understand. But it was funny, you know, because it was after this that we got the air attacks. So whether there was somebody, you know, passing on a bit of information to, because it was well known that the Germans had very close contacts in Spain itself. So whether they were passing information back, but it seemed rather funny that we got quite a large reception at that one particular time. But we used to have one hell of a job as trying to get to Boston. I mean, I remember coming to Boston. That was when Crash Cooper was with us, because we'd got one stuck in amongst the convoy, and we were detailed to go and get rid of him. And we went out, and we had one young chap who could speak Spanish, and he was. He was coming up there, vamos, 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 you know. This fellow just didn't want to know. He was, whether he'd found a good fishing ground or something, I don't know. But they were a bit of a curse.
So what next do you remember about the sweeps in the Irish Sea and off Scotland?
They were very boring, extremely boring.
More boring than the convoys?
Yes, I think so, because I think with having a convoy... You were always expecting to have trouble. I mean, looking at the ships we had there, in fact, one of the escorts that we had with us at one particular time was a Canadian ship, who I believe that Brock took over after he left us. And I believe it was a Prince Rupert. And but I mean, we had perhaps you could say some of the best ships in the English merchant fleet. They were a great prize for the submarines to sink.
But you found it boring being on your own.
Yeah, oh, very boring. I mean, we used to get. I suppose there were times we used to get contacts with, you know, on the Aztecs, and we'd go in and drop the bombs, you know, the depth charges on them. But I don't think we ever had any great success at that time. And we were in three, weren't we? The sinking of three.
You were present, yes. Yeah. But we don't remember them individually.
No, I don't. I remember the first one.
You told us, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that, to me, was retribution. And I was, you know, very chuffed about that.
For your brother?
Yes, I think so. I think even though, I mean, nobody likes killing people, but the point is you still... like to think that he's been the retribution has been paid, but we were up and down that coast for a fair while, like, you know, and we did find it extremely boring, you know, with quite a lot of time we were by ourselves.
What would you do when you were back in port? You know, back at Belfast, at Pollock Dock.
We used to go to into town and pitches. We did have on board a cinema on the after decks. It was never like, you know, never like the films we had. We used to the fellow there who. Did Strachan? He used to go and pick up from this film bureau and bring them back to the ship. And they were quite, you know, they were good films. They were top-rate films, like, you know. But they weren't. It's never the same if it's not in the cinema.
And what about when you went to shore? So you go to the cinema. What else would you do?
Well, you'd go for a drink and. they had quite a, I don't dance, but quite often they used to go to the local dance hall, and I used to like to listen to the music and that sort of thing, but I didn't dance myself. And quite a goal, we used to go up to, what was it called? Just outside of Belfast. We used to go up to this place, something Hall. Oh, I can't remember the name, but it's...
What would you do there?
We used to go up there, and they used to have Floral Hall, it was called, up there. And they used to have quite a lot of different, varied things on there, like, you know...
What kind of thing?
Shows and that sort of thing. It was... where the Floral Hall was a place that people used to go on Saturdays and Sundays, local people, to get away from the town. It was out of the town and up on the mountain side of it. Of course, that's where I met my first girlfriend, actually, in Belfast.
How did you get on with the Irish civilians, you know, the Irish?
It got quite well. Yeah, I wouldn't say we ever. We had to keep away from what's name, from one area of the town, which was the Catholic area. You could quite easily get really badly injured if you sort of went around there. And in fact, we had one fella who was courting an Irish girl who was a Catholic. And he used to go down to her house, and he got fairly badly beaten up. And we were, you know, warned against going down to the Falls Road area. We used to go, it's funny because we used to go up the Shanklin Road, which was the Protestant area. And I used to go knock around with a couple of Scots lads then, and we went into this pub this night, and I'd had this not awfully long before VE Day, and we went into this pub, and we had a look round, and we started having a drink, and up on the wall was a picture of this person on a white charger, and I said, like, who the bloody hell's that? Like, you know, and so one of the lads said, shut up, it's King Billy. I said, who the bloody hell's King Billy? And they very, very quickly got me out of the pub. We didn't stay there very long, and we went down the Shanklin Road back towards the ship, I suppose, and I wanted to go. I think at this particular time I wanted to go in and have a drink at this pub, and they got hold of me, said, no, come on, we're going back to the pub, and I sort of swung to get out of his grasp, and I went through a plate glass window, which sort of brought the police out, and we were put into the Shanklin Road jail, and they took all our laces off and all that sort of thing in the cell, and their lanyard and all that. But they didn't lock the door. So I walked out and went out through another door and climbed up on the roof. Well, all the way round this jail was coiled barbed wire, like, you know, and I'm stuck up there, and people are now collecting in the street. And they were, you know, shouting out. Of course, then the police came up to get me down. They got me down and they took me back to the ship. And I still wanted to go into the town. And I sort of pushed to get away from these couple of coppers who were with me. And one of the coppers went straight in the dock. He went in for a swim. But that was a one-off, very one-off, actually, because I wasn't...
That wasn't VE Day, it was before VE, just before VE Day.
Yeah, it was just before VE Day. Yeah, VE Day was... Because we'd done our... prior to this, we'd done our Russian convoy.
Because it looks in the history that the Russian convoy was after VE Day, but you don't...
We were due... No, that's totally wrong, that. Because we were actually due to go on our second one on VE Day.
Well, tell me about the first Russian convoy.
Yeah, well, we went over to Gurukh to pick up the convoy. We picked up the convoy and away we trundled. And I suppose... This was actually in the... It must have been in the October, November of 44. Perhaps a bit later. Could even be after Christmas. Yeah, could have been after Christmas because... I know it was hellishly cold. And we then trundled off up to Murmansk.
And what were conditions like?
Very, very bad, actually. I mean, we didn't get up very far and... we started to get fairly heavy snowfalls. Everybody complained about it, but because as you realise, on Russian convoy, you were on what's the name the whole time. You were at action stations the whole time. I mean, you never ever took your clothes off. I mean, you went to bed in your leather boots, like, you know. We used to have long johns, you know, to help keep warm. And we didn't get very far up, and quite heavy snow started to come down. And I remember one of the officers saying, "You should be very, very happy to see this," he said, "because you can't see them, and they bloody can't see you." And it was his philosophy, like, you know. But it did clear as we went up and sort of...
What was the cold like? I mean, it's...
It really cut. It really went right through to the bone. I mean, you've got to realise that when you were at action stations, you had nowhere to go. You just sat in a gun, either in the gun turret or, in the case of the Bofors, you were sitting outside the whole time, and there's no way of keeping warm. I mean, all you had was Kai, the food you had was mainly sandwiches and stuff like that, because, you know, there was no chance of getting a hot meal round to the different positions, like, you know.
And you'd be on the bridge?
I would be at that time, yeah.
And did anything happen during the voyage? What do you remember, other than the snow? And
I believe we lost ships, but I can't honestly say how many.
And you were on your way to Murmansk?
Yeah, actually a place called, is it Polyano or something like that? It's the actual submarine base alongside Murmansk.
And but what were your impressions of Polyano or Murmansk, whatever?
Oh, we were so tight-reined, we weren't allowed to go off the ship. We went once to a concert in a hallway out there, and... It was Russian Navy women trying to do a ballerina, I think, and they were mad. We used to rearm at this place we went into, Polyano, and you get two women. The barge had come alongside, and they had depth charges on board, and they used to just put a bar through it, and they just up on the deck like that, as though they, you know, they were lifting a two-pound bag of sugar. They were massive. They were. We used to trade with them, but the only thing they had to trade with was money, you know, notes. So they used to love our soap. You know, you give them a tablet of palm olive or something like that. They never smelt soap like it, you know. They used to go mad for it. It was a queer place. One of the main reasons, actually, they never let our people off was because they had quite a large brothel for the submariners up there, and they used to go, you know, use the brothel there. But we never got any invitations.
So that was anything else on the way back from Pollyanna?
No, it was. Reasonably quiet. I know because the ship's all unloading in Murmansk, like, you know, because that's the actual main dock. Where we were a sort of naval base. There used to be. I mean, I know we used to have this Fokker Condor used to fly overhead, and of course, I should imagine that Russian run could have been done in half of the time if we'd have gone from A to B, but we were forever last in changing course, and because you got very little darkness. It's you know, a dusk at the most, I suppose, and so of course as soon as it became dusk, we used to sort of change course, but next morning you still got the Fokker Condor flying around overhead. And of course, I think we lost a couple. I'm not really sure. I think we lost a couple of ships at least on that one. I'm not really over sure. Yeah, because I think we did. Because I remember seeing what's the name, ship hit. I think it was the one I'm thinking of. Ammunition ship hit, and what a and it's a wicked thing to say, but what a beautiful sight, like, you know, with all the exploding shells and everything like that. But I can't remember a lot of activity. That's when I lost my friend.
What was that? What happened?
Well, he was moving from one position to another, and he was coming by himself, and was coming down this ladder. Well, as I said, the spray used to wash it. As soon as it hit, it froze. I mean, and he was coming down this ladder, and he must have slipped, lost his balance, and nobody ever realised until an hour later that he was gone.
He fell overboard.
Yeah, he went over, must have gone overboard. But, I mean, you came off of watch at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then you were issued with the axes and everything, and you had to go round and chip off ice and try it over the side. And, I mean, you just get quite big lumps, like, you know. And, of course, as I said before, you know, with regard to what's them being so heavy and tall?
The mast.
We had to, you know, the spray used to come right over the bridge and hit the mast, like, you know, and you'd see it actually stick to the mast, like it would build up quite heavy on the upper deck and you know, that superstructure, like